Hi, I'm Vince Ferguson, president of Body Sculpt of New York. Welcome to 6 Weeks of Fitness, episode number 22, where we hope to inform, motivate, encourage, and inspire you towards living a healthier lifestyle. Thank you so much for tuning in. Now, if you know of anyone in need of personal training, group fitness instruction, or nutrition counseling, please contact me at vince@6weeks.com or call 718-346-5852. Now, in this episode, I will be joined by Daryl Richardson, founder of the Me Nobody Knows, a performing arts enrichment and literacy program. During the interview, Daryl will discuss what it takes to be a professional dancer, as well as her career on Broadway. Daryl will also discuss her film career, touring with Babyface, Barry White, and Earth, Wind & Fire, and so much more. You don't want to miss this very exciting episode. Now remember the words of that legendary football coach, Vince Lombardi, who said, "The price of success is hard work, dedication to the job at hand, and the determination that whether we win or lose, we have applied the best of ourselves to the task at hand, and now that's worth thinking about." Welcome back to 6 Weeks of Fitness. Miss Daryl Richardson is a native New Yorker, a professional dancer of stage, television, and film, director, producer, writer, caterer, CEO, and founder of the Me Nobody Knows, a self-published author and director and founder of the Allen Christian School Dance Academy from 2003 to 2012. Miss Daryl, as she prefers to be called, has appeared in Vanity Fair magazine with Tina Turner, on Broadway in The Wiz, Sophisticated Ladies, Can-Can, and Anything Goes. Her film credits include The Wiz movie, A Chorus Line the movie, The Mask, What's Love Got to Do with It, Junior, Hoodlum, and Monster Mash. Miss Richardson has toured with known artists such as Babyface, Barry White, Earth, Wind & Fire. Her television credits include the Academy Awards, the Essence Awards, the Soul Train Music Awards, the Emmy Awards, Cinderella, the Jamie Foxx Show, the Drew Carey Show, the Arsenio Hall Show, and the MTV Awards with Prince. And the list goes on. I am pleased to welcome Miss Daryl to our 6 Weeks of Fitness podcast. Daryl, how are you?
Hi, Vince. How are you? I'm wonderful. Thank you.
You have a most impressive resume. I'm sure you hear that everywhere you go.
I do. Thank you so much.
But before we get started, speaking about your not-for-profit organization, the Me Nobody Knows, let's talk about you, Daryl.
Okay.
Now, how did you get started, and when did you first realize you wanted to be a dancer?
That's interesting you should ask. My mom actually used to take me to dance classes when I was 3 years old, okay, at Gloria Jackson Dance Studio here in Jamaica, Queens. But, of course, at 3 years old, I was not doing anything but probably hanging on the bars and just, you know, running around. But she would take me there every Saturday, faithfully. She would just take me. By the time I was about 8 or 9 years old is when I really started participating in the classes and paying attention and wanting to do it. But when I was 14 years old, I said out of my mouth to a guidance counselor at the Count Basie Middle School 72 in Queens, she asked me what did I want to do when I grew up, because I was kind of mischievous and not really focused and kind of rebellious. And I said, I want to be a professional dancer on Broadway. And when I said that, she handed me an application for the High School of Performing Arts to audition, and I took the application home to my mom and my dad and filled it out and auditioned for the High School of Performing Arts. And that's how I started doing it professionally, like getting professional training. Yes.
Wow. Since the age of 14.
Yes. 14 is when I specifically said that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to be a professional dancer on Broadway. Like, I knew that's what I wanted to do.
So you actually spoke the words into existence.
I spoke it into the atmosphere. That's right. Yes, I did.
That is amazing. So who are your role models growing up?
Let's see. Actually, when I was younger, I used to love Diana Ross. I used to love Diana Ross, and I used to be outside doing Stop in the Name of Love and just singing her songs and doing choreography. I adored her. I thought she was glamorous. I thought she was such a lady. And so as I started to dance and pursue my career, she was kind of like always in the forefront of being classy, and I wanted to make sure that I was representing that kind of a role model. I always used to love to dress nicely and just carry myself a certain way. But yeah, I can say she was my role model. And she wasn't a dancer, but it was just her whole image of this gorgeous African-American woman that was famous and beautiful and had it going on. And so...
Yes, yes. So you would say that role models are very important in our children's lives. Wouldn't you say that?
Oh, absolutely. It's imperative that kids have positive role models and images to look up to.
Oh, and now what about your family? Were they supportive, though, of your career choice?
Yes, my parents, I was the baby in the family, and I was my mom and dad's little starlet. Because after I graduated from the High School of Performing Arts, I was auditioning for shows in New York, and I would always call my mom. I would go to a payphone. Didn't have cell phone back then. Go to the payphone and call my mom. Like, Mom, I just auditioned for this show, and I got it. I just auditioned for this commercial, and I got it. I was always calling them, letting them know I made the audition, and they would then would call all their friends and family members, and it was just very exciting in the Richardson home.
Wow. Now, what about your other siblings? You said you were the youngest. How many brothers and sisters do you have?
I have an older sister. She was 12 years older than me. And my brother was 10 years older than me. So technically, yeah, they were really far apart. They were close together, and I kind of came along like 10 years later. And so I kind of grew up in the house by myself because my sister and my brother was in college. He had gone out of the house. My sister got married at a young age. And so they were kind of like on their own. So I kind of grew up like an only child.
Wow. Most definitely, mm-hmm. though. Whoa. And so basically you had no one in the family to actually model your dreams and ambitions of, you know, after.
No.
So you chose Diana Ross.
I chose Diana Ross, exactly, and then I would go to dance class, you know, at Gloria Jackson, and we did recitals at the end of the year, and I had great dance teachers, and, you know, I just loved it. And then when I went to the High School of Performing Arts, I started working with Kinetic Energy. Kevin Hunt was a choreographer dancer that went to the school, and we started a company, we started performing, and so I just loved being on stage.
Huh, that is awesome. Now, I understand you actually moved to Los Angeles, California.
Yes, I did. I moved to Los Angeles in 1990 because I had done, you know, a lot of shows on Broadway. And I remember a lot of my friends were going to California because L.A. and New York are very different as it pertains to the industry. It's very different. And a girlfriend of mine called me up and she said, Daryl, you need to come out to L.A. You would work here. Paula Abdul was having an audition on Sunday. She called me like the week before. And literally within a week, I subletted my apartment. I was living on East 81st Street at the time. Subletted my apartment to a friend of mine. I told my mom and dad, I said, I'm going to California. I want to see, you know, how I do out there. They were supportive. I had friends that lived there. I packed my bag, went to audition for Paula Abdul. I did not get her tour, but she hired me for a Scat Cat video.
Scat Cat.
So I was in a Scat Cat video with Paula Abdul, yes.
I must have seen that along the way. What year was that?
You have. It was in, when was that? It was probably like 92.
Okay.
The title of the Scat Cat, it's called Scat Strut. It's on YouTube. You can pull it up on YouTube. It's Scat Strut.
I'm sure I've seen it because Paula Abdul was definitely one of the women that I most admired when it came to doing the dance and the singing, you know?
Oh, yeah, she was amazing. She had an amazing career, very talented, wonderful, wonderful artist.
So you were pretty successful even before you went to California.
I was. I was a dancer. I was a professional dancer making a living here in New York, you know, on Broadway, the Broadway circuit, and doing shows. and, you know, in the union. I was in Actors Equity. I was in Screen Actors Guild. So I was working as a professional dancer, yeah.
Okay, so Broadway was, well, actually working in New York was known, Broadway is more known for the New York type style, I guess, and
exactly.
California is more for film,
the
right?
Television and film, yes. That's why all of my credits on the award shows and everything, all that was done in L.A. I think I did one award show here in New York, which was at Radio City. But every other award show, all that stuff was done in California and Los Angeles.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. And how long did you stay in California before you moved back to New York?
I stayed in California until 1998. And I auditioned for Bishop T.D. Jakes' play. He was doing a play called Woman Thou Art Loose, and they were looking for a choreographer. And a friend of mine who was a singer in the play had called me up, and she said, you know, she literally said, God put you on my heart, and I wanted to reach out to you because T.D. Jakes is doing a play and he's looking for a choreographer, and God put you on my heart. Those are her exact words. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, all righty. So she gave me the information. I called them up. I had an audition, and I had to bring in another dancer. I had to put together like three little dance numbers, kind of like you know, real short pieces, just so they can see the type of choreography and the style of dance that I would, you know, bring to the project. And I brought a dancer friend in, Ivana Guy, and we partnered, and we did choreography, and I got the job. So then I left L.A. in 1998 to go on tour with the play.
Huh. Really?
For 2 years, that's... yes.
And then after that, you ended up in New York.
And then I came to New York because my parents were not doing well. And when I came to back home to visit, I saw the condition of my parents, and I knew, I was like, you know what? I got to come home because they need me. So
wow.
I came home. Yeah.
Wow, that's touching. That's really heartfelt, you know? Now, as you know, my organization is called Body Sculpt of New York. We're also a not-for-profit health and fitness organization, and our mission is to educate parents and children about obesity while offering healthy alternatives in fitness and nutrition. One of the main events that we put on is Children's Sports and Fitness Expo each year, where we bring out over about 3,000 kids come out, and they're engaged in about 25 sports activities, dance, health screenings, nutrition clinics, all totally free. So when I read about your organization, the Me Nobody Knows, I immediately thought about the similarities in that we're both trying to help children reach their fullest potential. My organization through health and fitness and yours through the arts, which are sort of related. Exactly. And the thing is, you know, we're all trying to help our children because they are our future, as
they
you
are.
Know.
You are so
really.
Right about it. Yes.
Yes. And so let's talk about your organization, the Me Nobody Knows. Where did that name come from, first of all?
Well, actually, the Me Nobody Knows was a play on Broadway back in, the 70s. I never saw the show, but I knew that that was the title of a show. And so when I came back to New York, I looked around. I came back to the house that I was raised in, you know, the community that I grew up in. And I noticed the kids were just hanging out in the summertime. They were just out in the streets. They were just out in the streets. And I can remember growing up, my mother, I mean, of course I went out to play, but I had stuff to do. I was either taking piano lessons, my mother was taking me to dance class, I went to charm school. It was all this stuff my mother was keeping me involved in so that I would not be in the street all day. And so I looked around, and I was like, okay, and I started talking to the kids. I'm like, hey, you guys, what are you guys doing? Oh, we're just playing, and I'm like, playing. Okay, so what do you guys want to be when you grow up? That was my favorite question to ask kids. And they, a lot of them would know, but a lot of them wouldn't. But a lot of them would say, I want to be a dancer. I want to be a singer. I want to be a rapper. It was all these things in the arts. And I thought, oh, my God, these kids, they desire to want to do this, but where are the platforms for them? Where are the avenues for them? Where are the opportunities for these kids to do that? And that's what motivated me to start the organization, the Me Nobody Knows. And it stands for tapping into the me, the talent in each child that nobody knows, and bringing it out to the forefront so that everyone can see it. So that's the premise of the name of my organization. And then I, you know, I started, I applied to become a nonprofit, and by 2006 is when I actually got my my tax exempt letter and approval to be a nonprofit organization. But in the meantime, I was still, you know, trying to do programs. I was going into the public schools. I had a dance academy at the Allen Christian School. I would give kids scholarships because a lot of times parents can't afford to pay for classes. And being that this was my livelihood, this was how I was making a living, I had to charge. You know, I would love to have been able to give the classes for free for all of them, but I needed to, you know, make a living as well. So my classes were very minimal. They were not by any chance expensive. They were very affordable. And I had, you know, over through the course of the time that I had my dance academy, I have seen and taught over thousands of children.
Thousands? Wow.
Thousands. And my first college graduate, I'm very proud to say, she just graduated from Sarah Lawrence College. Her name is Jindea Dash, and she now is my assistant.
Beautiful.
Yeah,
really?
So to really see, you know, the fruit of your labor.
Yes.
You know, teaching someone as a child and then watching them wanting to be a professional dancer, going to college and graduating, and then she's coming and being my right hand right now. So that was really a blessing.
Right. So that's excellent. So the dance school, the Allen Christian Academy?
Yeah, the Allen Christian School, they actually closed in 2012. But I was there from 2003 to 2012, so like 9 years. And then once they closed, I'm now over at PS 48. So I've been at PS 48 since 2012 with my dance academy. And it's called the Me Nobody Knows Dance Academy. As well as I teach at the Count Basie Middle School during the day, first, second, and third period, I teach dance. I'm the dance consultant over there.
Oh, I see.
So just always looking for opportunities to get that dance component within, you know, an institution, whether it's the school, whether it's a dance academy, because the kids need it. It's a form of exercise. It's a form of discipline.
Yeah.
And it's really, dance is one of the greater disciplines because you have to put your body has to be subjected to the various exercises. And, you know, as a bodybuilder, you know exactly what it's entailed when you're dealing with the body. That body has to come under subjection when you're working on those muscles and stuff. The same thing with choreography, you know, and dance. The body has to be put under subjection to be able to execute the choreography and the movement to the best of their ability.
Hmm. Well, let's talk about that. Now, when it comes to your dancing, what type of exercises do you put the children through?
Okay, we start with the basic. We start on the floor, having our heels together, hands on our ankles, bouncing our knees down, bending our head over to try to touch our heels, doing bounces. We stretch our legs out in front, sitting with our arms up, and then we lean forward to grab our ankles. It's all stretching on the Achilles, the hamstrings when you're on the floor. We open our legs in second position when your legs are open wide and you put your elbows on the floor. And so we're gradually, you know, it's a slow process because I don't make them just, you know, jar themselves. It's slow and it's according to everybody's ability. You do it to the best of your ability because we don't want anybody injuring themselves and everybody's body is different. And then once we do that, that's the stretching. We stand up and we do isolation with the head, the shoulders, the torso, the arms, and then we do pliés. We do first position, second position, ballet, pliés, demi-grand. We do passé, extension. So I have a combination of stretching as well as some technique and teaching them terminology.
Ah, terminology as well.
Yes, absolutely. Which is French, because ballet is French. Every terminology in ballet is French.
What about the modern dance? Any other type
teaching
of dance?
Modern liturgical, which is praise dance, teaching them African, tap, jazz, and hip-hop. So they're getting all genres of dance because in order to pursue professionally, you have to be able to do it all.
Huh. Wow. So
and
that
you
means
to be good at it all.
And you have to be good. And your body has to be in tip-top shape and condition.
Tip-top shape. That's right.
Wow. And what do you think about this, the fact that there's so many kids today that are obese and overweight?
Because they're not disciplined. There's a lack of discipline with their diet and what they're putting in their bodies. Their body is a temple. Their body is a temple. It's a temple of God, basically. And so how you treat it is going to result in the outcome of it. So if you're putting in, if you're eating junk food, then it's going to be junky. If you're eating healthy, you have to train. It's all discipline. You know, and some of the kids come into school, they have soda. I'm like, how are you drinking Coca-Cola in the morning? I don't get that. What are you putting in your body? I said, no, do not come in here with that. I tell them, don't come in here with that. Eating Cheetos, have a bag of Cheetos first thing in the morning. I'm like, did you not have breakfast? But see, this also has to do with the home and the environment.
Yes,
you know,
it does.
Giving your children some nutritional food, not a bag of Cheetos. Or don't give them money and think they're going to go buy something nutritional. They're going to go get junk food. You know, have some oatmeal or egg or something that is nutritional, a smoothie. What I do in the morning is I prepare my protein green drink. I put kale green and a banana and pineapple juice and coconut milk and protein powder in a blender, and that's my shake. And I can't tell you, I have so much energy in the morning. I do that every day, and I bring the shake into the classroom so the kids just feel like, ew, what is that? I'm like, let me tell you, it is so delicious. You know, so just trying to be the example, you know.
Oh, no, you're absolutely correct, and that's what we talk about here at 6 Weeks of Fitness at Body Sculpt, about being a good role model. You have got to lead by example. And
absolutely.
So it sounds to me like, so you talk to the children about nutrition as well.
Absolutely. Of course. Because the thing is, you have to have energy to dance. And so if you're eating sugar and if you're drinking Coca-Cola, you may have some energy for the most part, but when at the end of the day or even the end of the class, you are crashing. It's like a drug. You have no energy. It's not sustaining you. And that's what they have. That's what they're now learning, because they have all this. They're bouncing off the walls from the sugar, but then within an hour, they're exhausted. And I say, that's why. Look at you. Look at you. I said, you can't even think right now because you have put sugar in your system and you're not able to contain that. And so now your body is crashing because you did not have anything nutritional in your body to sustain you. And they see it. They feel it. So, you know, these kids are only in the sixth grade. They're sixth, seventh, and eighth graders. But still, hopefully, you know, they're going to get it.
Hmm. So your school is located in Jamaica, Queens?
Yes.
Okay. So the kids that participate are from the Queens area. No one comes from Brooklyn or Manhattan or other boroughs who participate.
No one has. This is like real community stuff. Like the school that I'm at, it's in Jamaica, Queens. It's the Count Basie Middle School, so I'm targeting all the kids that go to that school. I see over 100 kids for three periods, Monday through Thursday. And then my dance academy is at another school, and those kids are local as well.
Okay, but how do you promote the program throughout the Queens? How do you promote it? How do you get the word out?
For the dance academy, I get flyers, and I'm basically putting flyers at organizations and people's homes, on their cars, pinning them up in the stores. It's literally, hands-on promotion.
Grassroots.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the school, you know, I just get a principal that loves what I do, and they bring me in, and then there's my kids.
School paying you for this?
Absolutely. I'm an independent contractor, so I charge them hourly to come in there and teach, and they get funding to pay for my services. Yes, they do.
Excellent, excellent. Now, I know firsthand how challenging it can be running a not-for-profit organization, but what are some of your challenges, Daryl, that you run into?
The challenges that I have is a lot of the kids want to participate, and the parents also, but they don't have the funding to do it. They don't have the funding. Now, I don't charge. I charge literally $120 a month at my dance academy, and they come every Saturday for 2 hours every Saturday. So when you break that down, it's literally $30 for 2 hours of dance on Saturday. So it's $15 an hour.
Exactly.
You're not going to go anywhere in the city. You're going to pay $20 a class, easy.
Yes.
You're going to pay $20 for a class, for an hour class, easy. So I'm very competitive, but I try to be on the lower scale because of the community. I want to target the people in the community, but I also want to be conscious of, you know, single parent homes. And I'm always working with them. You know, if you don't have it, you know, we'll work it out. If I can give the kids a scholarship, I'm always trying to help the kids get involved. So that's my challenge. I try to apply for grants to subsidize those fees.
Yes.
And I get discretionary funding here and there from political parties, but it's never enough.
Never enough. Do you also hold fundraisers?
Yes, I had my last fundraiser. It hasn't been a while, though. I haven't had any fundraisers in the last couple of years. But I did have a fire awareness fundraiser. I was a victim in a fire back in 06, and I actually lost my brother in that fire. He passed away in that fire. And the next year, 07, I held a fundraiser at Lincoln Center because what happened to my brother, I did not want to happen to anybody else. And making people aware of what to do if ever you are confronted with a fire. Because a lot of times people don't know what to do because they panic. And that's what happened. My brother panicked and he threw water on the flames and it was a backdraft and it took him out like that. Yeah, and making sure fire alarms are in place, and it was from a burning candle, and I was promoting flameless candles and stuff. So anytime something tragic happens, I try to turn it around for something good to benefit the community and also to educate. Yeah. And so I started doing assemblies from that, and then my other fundraiser I did with Dominic Carter from New York One on child abuse. Because he had written a book called Mommy Something or Another. I can't remember the title, but he was a victim of child abuse. And, yeah, and he had come to my fire awareness event. That's how I met him. And he had me on New York One, did an interview and everything. And then he started telling me about the book. And I was like, oh, we need to really focus on that because there's so many kids that are being abused, but they're not saying anything. It's like the biggest hidden secret in a lot of families, you know. And so we did this huge fundraiser on child abuse. Yeah. So I try to do, anytime I do an event, I want to educate. It's for something that's focusing to educate and to empower people with knowledge, because knowledge is power.
Most definitely. And also how you use that knowledge, correct?
Absolutely.
You have a saying about believing.
Yeah.
How's that go?
If you can believe it, you can achieve it. And if you can see it, then you can be it. It's all about how they see themselves. It's building self-esteem and self-worth. Because what I realize with children is a lot of times kids have been told negative things about themselves, you know, called names and things, even by family members. And words have power, especially in the life of a child. So if you're not building them up and edifying them, then those words are destroying them and bringing them down. And a lot of times they believe it. So my thing is changing that paradigm shift of that mindset to show them, you guys are fearfully and wonderfully made. There's not another you on the planet. Don't you get that? You can do anything and be anything you can even imagine. You don't have to settle. You can do anything. What is it you want to do? What are you good at? I'm always trying to find their talent. Search out. What do people compliment you on? And then it gets them thinking, oh, well, I like to do hair, or I like to draw, or I like to read, you know, whatever it is. And then it's starting to focus on that aspect of who they are and encourage them from that perspective. And it's amazing how it's life-changing. And I do that through my dance classes, believe it or not.
Oh, I believe it.
Through my dance classes. It's amazing.
Well, that's why you're such an amazing person, though, Daryl.
That's oh, a beautiful bless your heart. Thing. Thank you. I've had parents tell me that they've noticed a difference in their children's personality and, you know, self-esteem just from taking the dance classes. Because I'm not screaming and yelling at them. If I'm screaming and yelling at them, it's either because they're chewing gum or, you know, they're drinking Coca-Cola or something like that. But, like, most dance teachers are screaming at their kids because they're not doing something physical or they are getting on them about their weight. And one thing about me, all are welcome. I don't want to make them feel guilty about how they look, even though we do want to work on images and eating right. But if you do have a child that could be a little overweight, I don't want her to feel less than in the classroom. You know what I'm saying? I want her to be able to project and to do the choreography just like the next person.
Very nice. Very much. Right. You really empower the children. That's so important, you know?
Yeah, like you said, they are our future. And if we don't do it, nobody's coming in our community to build up our kids. They're just not. They're building prisons and expecting them to fail.
Oh, definitely. So we need to lift them up.
Absolutely.
Right? Lift them up. Now, let me ask you, going back to the fundraising question, you've been in touch with so many celebrities in the past. You've worked with so many of them. Do any of them come out to support you when you actually trying to raise funds, perhaps as a benefactor or something of your program?
You know what? They haven't, but I haven't even really reached out to them because none of them are here in New York. They're all in Los Angeles or, you know, other states. But you know what? That's a great idea. I should really try to reach out to see if I couldn't get some support from them.
Most definitely, because all you need is a headliner, somebody with name recognition.
Well,
that, you
one
know,
person did. LL Cool J was a part of my fire awareness event. He was our guest celebrity, and Cheryl Wills from New York One was my mistress of ceremonies.
Okay, excellent. Now, did you meet LL initially when you had your catering business? Talk about that.
Yeah, I had actually catered for LL and his wife when I lived in Los Angeles. Okay, when I started my catering company, I had just come off the road. I have a daughter, and so I got pregnant, and I was carrying her. And when I had her, I knew that I was not going to be able to go on the road like I was. I had to start thinking about, okay, what am I going to do to stay in California? Because I cannot be touring and having a newborn. That's not going to happen. And so that's how I started my catering business. And so I started going back to artists that I worked with, who, you know, LL Cool J and Babyface. And I remember going to a salon. My girlfriend Tracy, who used to do Babyface's hair, she had a hair salon that was catered to all the celebrities. She did Vivica Fox's hair. She did Jada Pinkett's hair. She did Nia Long's hair. Like, all the celebrities came to her salon. So I went to her salon and I said, Tracy, I said, I'm starting a catering company. Can I bring lunch to your clients? And she said, make me something and let me taste your food. Because, you know, a lot of they didn't know that I can cook. And so I made her some salmon and salad and peach cobbler. I had all these fabulous desserts and food. And she said, if you bring me lunch every day, I'll let you serve, you know, feed my people and charge them. I was like, that's a deal. So I started making lunches and bringing them up to the salon. And Nia Long and all these celebrities were up there, and LL Cool J's wife was there. And so anyway, so I was feeding them. So then years later, it's interesting, I am catering for, maybe a year later, I'm catering for Babyface because I had been on tour with him as one of his dancers. And he was like, you can cook? I'm like, yes, I can cook. And so I brought him samples. He says, you can make this for like 400, 500 people? I said, yes. And so he hired me for a pre-Grammy party. He hired me to do LL Cool J's video. He just started hiring me to do all this stuff because he was working with, what's that producer's name that did, Benny Medina was the producer of LL Cool J, and he had a lot of shows. and all of his connections. They started hiring for all the stuff. So anyway, so that happened. Then when I came back to L.A., I mean from L.A. to New York, I was at church at the Greater Allen Cathedral, and LL Cool J went to the church. Uh-huh. And I saw his wife, and I went up to her, and I said, I don't know if you remember me. I said, but I lived in L.A., and I used to cater and bring food up to Eclipse Hair Salon. And she said, banana pudding. She remembered my banana pudding.
Wow.
Oh, wow. I was like, yes. She said, girl, you made the best banana pudding. And that's how I started asking her. I said, well, listen, I'm doing an event. I was in a house fire. And I'm trying to see if LL would want to be a part of it. And before I can even finish it, she was giving me the manager's number.
Really?
It was amazing, yes.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was just amazing. And I also cooked for Magic Johnson. I had gone into Magic's house. He was going to hire me as his cook. I did birthday parties at his production company. It was just amazing. I had such an elaborate career, not only as a dancer, but like everything I put my hands to would prosper.
Isn't that something? Yes.
Yeah.
It's that good positive energy of yours, you know?
Absolutely.
So now you've got to see if you can actually link up with some of these people to actually help launch your program to the next level so you can receive those.
You know what? You're right. You're right about it. Definitely.
So think about that. Think about that and what event you can do to maybe have them come out and support you, you know?
That's a great idea. I will. Definitely.
What are your future goals?
Well, I just completed a work-study mentoring book that's on Amazon.com, and it's called Mentoring the Me Nobody Knows.
Ah.
And what it is a collaboration of, and a compilation actually, of a mentoring session with me. And basically everything that I just talked about, it's all of that in the book. But it's questions for the kids. It's there are quizzes in there about learning styles. This is another thing that is very kind of disheartening as it pertains to our children. You know, kids have a different way of learning. Children don't learn the same, okay? Every child learns differently. And one of the things that I find that the Board of Education does not tap into is the way each child learns. So if a child is not picking up something, immediately they think that they have an attention deficit problem, like ADHD or something. And that's not the truth. The problem is this child learns differently. So you need to figure out what is motivating them to comprehension and then teach them accordingly. So my book covers that. So there are 9 different learning styles. And I did a lot of research on it. And it's quite fascinating because it helps the kids to tap into, okay, I'm not stupid, you know, because sometimes kids are told they're stupid if they're not learning something a certain way, or, you know, they've been called names, and it's like, it just breaks my heart. So letting them know, no, you are not, you do not lack intelligence, you are not dumb, you are not stupid, you learn differently. You have a different intelligence, you learn differently. That doesn't mean that you have a lack of it. It's just a different way of learning. And so then that kind of motivates them. They're like, oh, because, yeah, I'm different. Everyone's different. So we don't all learn the same. Just like we don't all look the same. You know, we don't have the same DNA. We don't have the same fingerprints. The same with learning. And so my work study book is a mentoring book to help kids tap into that and to think about their future, setting goals. There's a vision board chapter in there where you can start writing, you know, where do you see yourself in a year, 5 years from now? What's your dream goal job? What's your vision for your future? And just to start making them dream out loud and think about what they want to do. Because, you know, it's endless and it's achievable. If you can believe it, you can achieve it. That's my motto.
That's it. And that's a beautiful motto to have, let me tell you right now. Now, how can my listeners learn more about your program?
Well, I have a website. It's www.themnkincnewyork.com. And then My book is on Amazon.com and CreateSpace, and that title is Mentoring the Me Nobody Knows by Garrel Richardson. We just launched it. It's been on there now for 2 weeks.
Good. How much is the book?
Well, the asking price on Amazon is $25, but they do bring that price down when they're trying to promote it. Like sometimes I looked on it last week and it was like $22 or $21. So they fluctuate it with depending on sales.
Okay. Is it an ebook or is it a hard copy?
Well, you can get it on as an ebook or as a hard copy.
Oh, good. Excellent. Mm-hmm. Very flexible there. Now, what about social media? Are you on social media?
I'm on Facebook. I'm on LinkedIn.
And what about Twitter?
I am on Twitter, but I'm not on Twitter like I should be. I do
exactly.
have a Twitter account, but I'm really not on it like I should be. I really need to really be on, like Facebook, I go on there every day, you know, it's hooked up to my phone. But I really need to be more active on Twitter.
Okay, so just promise, just make that, determination that
that's
you're going to...
That's going to be one of my goals.
Exactly, one of your goals.
Yes.
Definitely, Daryl. So look, Daryl, on behalf of my organization, Body Scope of New York, I want to thank you for coming on our 6 weeks of fitness podcast. You are truly an amazing woman. And we look forward.
I mean it.
And we look forward to working with you in the future. And to my listeners, thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of 6 weeks of fitness. I hope you enjoyed listening as much as I enjoyed bringing it to you. Bye-bye.